You're listening to The Industrial Movement, where we discuss the people, the processes, and the equipment that drives American manufacturing. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Industrial Movement podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and the show notes can be found at our website at www.theindustrialmovement.com. Come back often and feel free to add this podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow the show on Twitter at The Industrial Movement or on our Facebook page. All links to our social media can be found in the show notes and also at the bottom of our website. Now, let's get on to the show. Hi, folks. Welcome to The Industrial Movement. I'm your show host, Morty Hodge, and with me as always is my sidekick, Greg Smith.
Yes, welcome to the show.
Today we have a guest, Nathan Ruitz. He's the Director of Manufacturing Operations at Custom Deco, based out of Detroit. Nathan, welcome to The Industrial Movement.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to bring me on here and look forward to it.
So, Nathan, tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are now, and then a little bit about the company.
All right. Well, I started my career in manufacturing, gosh, it's been almost 20 years ago now. I actually started in general labor. So I didn't really take the traditional trajectory like I think some folks have and went through college and whatnot. I did start out in the plant floor, and I think that's helped me a lot in my career. I worked out in a metal stamping to start my career in automotive for a tier one metal stamping supplier up in Belleville, Michigan. And, you know, I spent a couple of years working in the press room, and then I eventually moved up into more of a technician setup role and eventually supervision. And from there, moved to plant manager within a few years and just kind of worked my career. You know, I spent time at a couple different stamping facilities over the course of a few years, and I ended up taking this position at Custom Deco in Toledo, Ohio, about 5 years ago, and it's been phenomenal. It's been definitely a change of pace. You know, I spent the first 15 years or so of my career in automotive and metal stamping, and to jump into the world of Custom Deco, which we do, we decorate drinking glasses for the bar and brewery markets. So definitely a unique experience so far, but it's been a lot of fun.
Now, when you say decorate the drinking ware, elaborate on that a little bit.
So we are literally buying drinking glasses from some bigger companies that you might be familiar with. And we're screen printing glassware anywhere from 144 pieces up to over 100,000 pieces or more at a time. So it's large scale. We're one of the biggest glassware decorators in the United States, North America for that matter. And it's definitely every day something new. We're printing, it's all make to order for the most part. We do some reorder stuff. We service all the large breweries in the United States, as well as a lot of craft breweries and distilleries. And overall, it's very exciting work that we do. So
there's no doubt that Morty and I have partaken in many of those glasses and used through our time.
Yeah, we drink a lot of beer. we have in the past. You said that the company is part of a larger company. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so our parent company is called the Belter Companies. It's in the food service world. So there's three primary divisions of our organization. One is contract, which is essentially designing, building new restaurants for whether it's arenas, elderly care homes, schools, government buildings, and then furnishing and supplying replenishment programs for those facilities. And that's really one of the biggest pieces of our organization. And then we have the supply division, which is akin to like a Gordon Foods or a Sysco, where replenishing for restaurants and supplies. And then the beverage division, which is primarily which my plant supports, is exactly what it sounds like. We support the beverage industry. So big beer accounts and craft beer distilleries, wineries, etc. With one of our primary commodities being glassware. That's one of the primary things that we're selling, as well as a litany of others. But my plant in particular, we're vertically integrated with Belter to support the glassware for the Belter business. And in addition to that, we do have a facility that was located in Vancouver, British Columbia, that produces handmade ceramic tap handles for the bar and brewery market. And we've recently been working on a project to get our manufacturing all under one roof to build those synergies in our facility. And we've spent the past 6 months relocating that entire operation to Toledo, Ohio. We're just about there to where we're getting ready to ramp up full production in the next couple 2 to 3 weeks. So,
and that will fall underneath you. Great.
Yes, I currently oversee both operations right now. We're in the process of moving that again to the one singular location. So,
what are some of the biggest challenges that your industry is facing today?
So I think it's the same as I think what most people are dealing with right now. The labor market's very tight. It's very hard to find enough people to fill the roles that we have open, especially as we're adding additional jobs here in Toledo to our plant. It's been very difficult to find people to fill those positions. So that's been one of our biggest challenges. The supply chain issues in terms of getting glassware domestically has been an issue, capacity constraints with domestic suppliers, and then the logistics issues of trying to bring in any materials from overseas to fulfill the capacity issues that we have domestically. So, you know, overall, you know, if I had to pick one, it depends on the day, right? Which one is the most pressing concern at the moment? So, but I have a phenomenal team that I work with that has done a lot to help mitigate some of these issues over the past 12 to 18 months. And just every day is a new opportunity to find a solution for some of these challenges that we're faced with now. So
what advice would you offer to somebody who wanted to follow in your footsteps or other manufacturing leaders out there? What advice would you give them?
You know, for me, the one thing that I've learned over time is you learn it both from the people you look up to and then the people that you remember that you didn't really look up to. But it's all about people, 100%. Everything, your successes and failures are all built upon the people that you surround yourself with and how you support them as a leader. And always taking the opportunity to, you should always be looking to grow your team, to build your team, to set them up for success. And the more successful they are, the more successful you will be. You know, I think coming up, one of the things that I learned as I progressed through my career was, you know, you don't wait for the opportunity to be handed to you. You seize it, right? You see those learning opportunities. You don't wait for somebody to say, hey, let's go do a training exercise or let's do this. You look for the opportunities to learn and to train yourself and then take advantage of the other opportunities as they arise to provide more value. You know, always look for an opportunity to provide more value in your current situation.
Talk to us about any books or any resources that helped you along your path.
One of the ones that I like to use, because I think for me, what I've found is, you know, manufacturing can be tough, especially for the folks out in the plant. It gets to be redundant. You know, you got to make it fun and have people understand how they can, any position in the organization can have a huge impact with to the bottom line into the performance and success of the organization. And one of the books that we use currently in our current company that has really been helpful is 2 Second Lean. I don't know if you've heard of it, from Paul Akers. I'd highly recommend it. It kind of takes the 5S philosophy and breaks it down into a more fun approach, more usable approach that I think people really connect with. It's a little bit easier to execute on for people who are new or just getting exposed to these types of philosophies, right? So if you got entry-level folks out on the floor that haven't been exposed to it, it definitely is a unique twist to your traditional 5S training and philosophy. So that's a great one. And then one that I'm actually going through right now with a lot of members of our executive leadership team at corporate, and you know, the owners of the company are actually sitting in on it as well, is servant leadership training. You know, so that's really our whole company, meaning our corporate offices all the way down to the other divisions. Servant leadership is a philosophy that we all live by. I mean, you can see I'm dressed every day to go out and help in the plant in whatever way I can. And that's how we all approach it, right? Is what can we do to build our team? What can we do to help our team? And how do we support them from a servant leadership perspective?
Who are two of the people that have helped you the most, have been most influential for you?
So I'll list one that I worked with at a company called MTW. He's no longer with the company, but it was a president and CEO. His name was Todd Deal. And it's a global organization. It's owned, privately held by a gentleman named Moon Kong out of South Korea. But he's got a couple of locations here in Michigan, in the Michigan area. And they do primarily hot stamping for the automotive industry, hot stamping and assembly. Todd Deal was one of the, you know, I kind of, before I really was exposed to the official trainings and philosophy and language of servant leadership world, I first started seeing it with Todd and his behaviors. And what I mean by that is very down to earth. You know, he's the CEO, president of the organization for the North American operations. And he'd spend 90% of his time in the plant, you know, with the people side by side, learning, helping, doing whatever needed to be done. And that was inspiring to me, you know, again, growing up and looking at other folks that maybe didn't hold that philosophy. And I remember back to, again, when I was out on the floor in those operator positions or a general labor position out in the plant. And I remember the leaders that I looked up to and inspired me in what they did that was inspirational to me. And I remembered the ones that weren't so much inspirational to me and kind of as what not to do in my career. And then the next one I would say is Rick Belter, who's actually the owner of our company. He is probably the, you know, if you look up servant leadership in the dictionary right next to Robert Greenleaf, you're going to see another picture of Rick Belter right there. So he's been very inspirational to me as well. And I enjoy the time I've spent with him over the past 5 years, just growing more as a leader and understanding more of the tactical approach and how to apply servant leadership in my day-to-day activities with my team.
What is your biggest lesson learned and what did you take away from it?
You know, again, I don't want to be redundant, but I mean, the biggest thing for me is again, I know I've already said it, but it legitimately is all about people. You've got to be able to trust your team. And, you know, what I found with that is, and you see the cliches, but they're also very true. Like you're better, you know, I look more for the value in the associate. It's less to me about skill and even education as it is about drive, motivation, character, what they bring to the table, their effort that they put in. And I guess the lesson that I've learned over time is, you know, when you choose that skill and maybe the character's missing, you end up regretting it, right? When you're looking to place candidates, looking to identify candidates on your team, you know, I find more and more that I lean more towards the dedication, the commitment, the character piece than I do towards a specific skill set. Obviously, there's got to be a baseline and some general knowledge to jump into a role, but that's where I promote my team from. That's what I look for in my team. It's the types of people that I try to surround myself with.
Good stuff. So besides the workforce issue that everyone seems to have these days, is what are some other day-to-day challenges you face in your position?
Primarily the day-to-day stuff in my business today is a lot of, and this is more specific to just my industry, I think it can be applied across the board, is making sure, kind of connecting the dots between the sales team and the manufacturing group and customer expectation, right? Capabilities versus customer expectation, understanding, gaining that alignment. You know, I remember there's a poster I've seen, it's the tire swing, and you've got the engineer's perspective, the customer's perspective, manufacturing's perspective. And it's so very true regardless of what industry you work in, is what is that expectation versus, what the understanding of the expectation is on the manufacturing side. And it's even more true in my world now, where I feel like in the automotive world and the stamping world, you have very specific measurements, parameters, dimensional blueprints. When you're putting a piece of art on glass, it tends to be a little bit subjective in terms of color and clarity and registration and how it looks. So trying to marry that up into a manufacturing perspective and assign some standards and costing to it is probably one of the biggest challenges I have in my current role.
Nathan, are you saying that salesmen promise more? Is that what I'm hearing?
You know, everybody's coming at it from a different perspective, right? And, you know, sometimes you gotta empathize and put yourself in their shoes and understand why they're coming from that perspective. And it might sound crazy when the way they articulate it to you at first, but being able to bridge that gap is, I feel like, one of my probably unwritten roles in my current position is trying to be the conduit between the execution on the plant floor all the way to the sales team and how they're communicating with the customer.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You're exactly right. And I was just joking with you and putting words in your mouth, right? Your sales team's going to listen to this and then come after you. season. We actually had a salesman on the show for that exact reason, to get that perspective, because it is different. And we all know, right, in manufacturing, we get it. We know nothing happens until a sale is made, right? We understand that, but it can be extremely difficult making or delivering on some of the expectations that are put on manufacturing. And it's a never-ending battle, and we all go about it the best we can. And in the end, I feel like most people succeed in delivering on the customer's expectations.
Sure. Yep, absolutely.
Very good. Tell us about a typical day at your facility. What are the processes? Seed to flower, how does the process work?
So we will get it comes in, the orders come in from a variety of different angles, but typically we'll have a customer, they've got a design that they want, they've got an item that they want to put it on. We're working with them on the front end to build an art proof for them to review based on what they're requesting. Sometimes a lot of our customers, they have their own design teams and they're sending us the art that they want right out of the gate. Others, they need some support and we're happy to help. So we essentially, our art team will put a proof together. We'll show the image on the glassware or the tap handle as they've requested, send it out for approval. Once we get approval, we'll get the order into our system. And our when it hits the production floor, the first thing we're doing is we do a couple different types of printing. We're either screen printing or we're doing direct to surface with a digital printer. So we will print directly to glass with a digital printer. And it's a newer technology that we're moving towards as of late. And what we do is, once it hits the floor, it's either going to get a screens made to print it and the ink mixed and produced. We do all that on site. We color match on site. We mix our inks on site. And then the inks, the screens will go out to the production line. We've got a variety of different machines that run different ink systems. So some inks are heat cured and wax based, and they're heat cured. They're ceramic enamel inks, and some are UV inks that are cured with UV light. And it will go to the machine, and we will then produce the product. It'll go through an AQL audit on the end of our production line. So essentially, we are packing it and auditing based on the size of the order. We'll audit X amount of pieces out of X amount of boxes and, look for major and minor attributes on those items. And then once it passes the quality inspection, it'll get released to shipping to be sent out the door. We keep almost no finished goods stock. We, meaning the plant, the manufacturing plant, our corporate offices, we do have a lot of fulfillment customers that we will keep product on site to fulfill their orders and to help support them in urgent demands and needs. But most of what we do is make to order. And, most of our inventory is blank material, raw materials. So,
yeah, I got a follow-up question about the ink and the process, because in bar glasses, they're constantly washing these glasses with heat and water. What is there anything special about the paint and different things to stand up to a constant heat and water.
That's funny you bring that up. That's one of the current challenges that we were working towards moving forward is for a lot of reasons, we're working to get away from the heat cured, the ceramic enamels, and there's a variety of reasons. There's regulatory concerns. They're very safe inks to use, but you know, they are, some of them do contain different products that fall underneath like Prop 65 regulations and whatnot. So we're moving away from trying to use those as those types of regulations continue to expand to more and more and more states. And then our UV inks are a lot more, they're 100% organic inks. We can make any color under the sun. They're UV cured, so there's real-time results. So the ceramic enamels, there's a footprint issue in the plant. So when you talk about square foot utilization of the plant space, we've got a 100-foot curing oven that we're using to heat cure where UV, it's coming right off the line ready to go. So one of the challenges with moving to UV is there is differences in adhesion compared to ceramics versus UV. So the ceramics have glass frit and wax in the pigments is what makes it up. It essentially looks like a melted crayon when it's in the raw form. And then we're mixing these, we're laying them on the glass. So when it's fired out, that wax is burning off and the frit is actually burning into the glass and becoming part of the glass itself. So it's a lot more durable for scratch resistance. But what we found is that ink, that color will eventually fade over time. It leaches out of the glass over a period of time in dishwasher cycles. So UV ink is far more durable in terms of dishwasher testing. However, when it's hot, it's very susceptible to scratching. So when I talk about customer expectations, what we've been trying to work on over time is building literature and material to arm our sales team with, to have these discussions with the customer and say, look, here is the types of inks that we offer. Here's their pros and cons. Here's it, depending on your usage, here's what I'd recommend. If you're going to go with that, here's some products that we would also recommend for caring for your glass, right? No different than how you use certain products to wash your clothes, to wash, you know, certain stuff can go high temp, certain stuff has to be dry washed. We're trying to, which is kind of surprisingly so, there's not been a lot of literature or conversation about this in our industry. And we're trying to work not only with some of our supplier partners, but as well with our internally, with our sales team to get some literature and education out there so we can have dialogue with our customers on the front end and choose the product that's going to work best for their application.
Awesome. What processes or systems do you have in place to help with efficiency and productivity?
So we have, and you'll see as part of that 2-second lean book, if you look into it, it's something we call 2-second improvements. So any employee in our facility can bring to the table a 2-second improvement, which is essentially, you know, if you can save 2 seconds, philosophies, you can save 2 seconds every day over the course of year, you know, it adds up, right? So we encourage our team to be part of the solution. That's part of our servant leadership approach is, or if they bring a problem to us, it's the first question we ask is, well, how would you solve it? What do you think you would do with it? Because more than likely they have the answer or have the starting of an answer and just maybe don't have the resource or access to the resources to execute on it. So we do like to encourage our team, not only that if they bring an idea to the table, we help them get it to the finish line. You know, whether that's time, materials, or, okay, you have this idea, we'll pull you off your machine, we'll reassign somebody to cover you and let you take the lead on getting this to the finish line. And, you know, for me, it drives more ownership, a stronger sense of ownership, and there's more of a commitment in terms of sustainability because it's easy to execute on all these things. The hard part is keeping it going 2-3 weeks, 2-3 months down the road. Not that we don't still always have those challenges, but, you know, that's some of what we do. Obviously, we have a lot of metric boards out on the floor. So we've got different metric boards, one for the plant and then one at each of our main machines that demonstrate throughput performance, quality performance, and whatnot. So those are the types of tools we use day to day. And then while we, you know, our facility is not under TS or IATF regulations like you would have in terms of like an automotive supplier, I've taken a lot of that, those tools that I learned from, you know, GM supplier quality and whatnot, that, and have applied those in this facility, things like layered process audits, where we've got people from different disciplines going to a work area and auditing it for the safety and quality functions and housekeeping, and just a fresh set of eyes on a different department or a different area to help make sure that we're sustaining the things that we put in place.
Where do you see your business in the next 10 years?
In the next 10 years, I think that we are going to continue to expand our print capabilities into more digital footprint. I think there's going to be a lot more direct-to-machine printing capabilities that we're going to be getting into. We're really big on we like our customers to have the option to have somebody on the other line to speak to, so it's not so disconnected. Like, you know, it's one of the pros and cons of all this technology is it's great, everything's automated, but at the same time, a lot of times you just want to be able to pick up the phone and call and talk to somebody and work through an issue. So we pride ourselves on taking that approach with our customer, but at the same token, customers sometimes also want ease of use. So, you know, I think that in the next 10 years, we're going to have a lot more digital capabilities in terms of direct to surface printing, and more kind of lights out manufacturing, where the orders come in, go straight to the machine, and there's not so much front end touch points required to get it to the machine. I think that's going to be huge. I think that, you know, a lot of what happens in our industry tends to be very cyclical, like with, again, clothing styles come in and out of fashion. It's the same thing with glassware. There's items that we haven't sold in 5 years that all of a sudden there'll be a huge demand for them, and we'll be getting back into them. So, you know, I think in terms of that, I don't see a lot changing. I think we're going to get a lot into more substrates and whatnot. I think glass continues to be bigger. We're seeing a lot of different customers taking the sustainability approach in terms of, you know, one-use plastic is starting to be looked at to be outlawed in many states. So we have a lot of different customers that we work with that are producing returnable glass bottles for water, returnable or one-use glass bottles. We're doing a lot of stainless and aluminum cups that can be recycled instead of disposable plastic, or paper products. So we're definitely starting to see, you know, where we were probably 99% glassware 5 years ago, we're probably 90% glassware now, 95% glassware now. And it just seems like we're getting more and more into other substrates as part of this move for sustainability. So
awesome. So what is one common myth about your profession or field that you would want to debunk?
This could be printing or manufacturing, you know, either side of the business.
I think in manufacturing, the myth that the team on the floor doesn't really connect. Again, I'm speaking more in terms of connecting with that sales team and the customer voice, right? Understanding the customer voice. You know, I think the myth is that there's a perception that the manufacturing team doesn't get it or doesn't care. I found quite the contrary, that the more they know of how their performance affects the customer and the end user and how it's utilized, whether it's an automotive part and where it's going on the vehicle, or it's a glass and we know it's going to a specific event for whatever, you know, and why that's important, then I think the more they care and the more effort they put in. So I think that would be one myth. And then in terms of our specific industry, you know, one of the biggest myths is that the UV inks, which we're moving towards, and it's a newer technology, that the adhesion and durability isn't there. I think that's kind of a common myth that's out in my specific industry. And, you know, I think the best way to combat that for me is getting the knowledge and education out there of, you know, if it's handled correctly, it will stand up to, you know, the same durability as what those ceramic enamels have. So,
what is one thing you would want to share with our listeners that will help them be better leaders?
Listen first, right? And it's easy to jump in. And, you know, when your team comes to you with a problem, you know, they may not necessarily be looking for you to solve it so much as looking for a sounding board. And a lot of times I've found that, you know, one of the worst things you can do for your team in their development is help too much, right? You kind of become, it's kind of the same philosophy of the helicopter parent is you got to let your team, and to a point, right? But you got to let your team struggle when appropriate and learn the lesson on their own occasionally. You know, I think that's kind of a fine line to walk with being negligent versus, I mean, obviously you're going to jump in if it's something serious, but, you know, a lot of times I find, and I used to, you know, I have to make a conscious effort to not do this, but I have a tendency to just jump in and say, all right, well, here's what we're going to do. And, you know, map it all out for the team. And you know, I've learned to pump the brakes a little bit and let the team kind of come to their own conclusions, because my, you know, my idea is not always going to be the best idea. It's the one thing that, you know, is for certain is they're doing it every day. So they know what's right and they know what they need to do. And a lot of times they need a sounding board or they need help executing on their idea or supporting in solving their problem. So listen first, and then it would be my advice, I guess, in summary.
One of our goals is to create a community of manufacturing leaders. How could one of our listeners reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, I think the best way to reach out to me is on LinkedIn from a professional perspective. You know, I try to stay on top of it and happy to chat or connect, always looking to expand my network and meet with new people, especially, you know, if there's opportunities where we can, you know, share ideas, thoughts, or help each other in our careers or even in our day-to-day activities. So
I love it. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us on the Industrial Movement today. It was a true pleasure to get to know you and hear your story.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think good stuff. I'm a big fan of your products.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you.
Well, folks, that's it for this week's episode. Be sure to visit our website, www.theindustrialmovement.com, to view today's show notes and get more golden nuggets of value that we have collected from manufacturing and industrial professionals in our archived episodes. On our website, you can also sign up for our newsletter and find links to join the Industrial Movement community on Facebook. The Industrial Movement podcast is where we discuss the people, the process, and the equipment that drives American manufacturing. I'm your host, Morty Hodge, wishing you great success.